And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. Patty Quatro, I am totally still blown away by the reception you and the Pleasure Seekers received on your nine-day stint, I want to say magical tour, nine-day tour in July 1968 with Pat O'Day, no less, male musicians who were gaga over you, filming you off in the wings, screaming and adoring fans, both male and female, who were giving you five-minute standing ovations. I'm just catching my breath with all of this still because it's just so exciting. And this nine-day tour was so successful. And remember that Pat O'Day hired you on hearsay, but it was so successful at the end of 9 days that he invited you back to put you on a summer tour for 3 months. And I just want to hear anything you have to say, Patty, any follow-up to this.
You know, the ovations were mind-blowing for a band that did not have an international acclaim yet, didn't even have like a happening, real happening single out yet. And his love fest towards us with the PR and everything, publicly on mic, everywhere, was gobsmacking and amazing. It definitely motivated us to show people what we could do. There was no, you know, no other intent. And honestly, he didn't even, at the end of this nine, all he did was hold us there. He didn't send us back anywhere. He just extended the whole thing for the whole summer. We never left. He wouldn't let us leave.
Well, that really was a love fest. But as we read, and we have a lot more to read, and I don't know if we're going to get to it on this episode, but we do have a lot more to read from him, from his associates, some of your fans. But as we have talked about, he was so into you, and he got you as a band. And he said that you were one of, if not the best act on the pop scene. And we talked about this, but I just want to underscore that point. He did not say top female act. Genderless. And as we have talked about, we really do have Patty more press than we have time to read. So we will be posting a lot of it because I just think it's incredible what people were saying about you. But I did want to highlight another a couple of glowing comments. One of them being from a recent exchange you had on Facebook with an online friend. Well, she's a real life friend, but you had it online with fellow Detroiter and female guitarist Diane Plemons, who's now Diane Plemons Bartolotta. And after listening to our episode about your singles, Diane said to you, quote, "I told you before, Patty, but I say this now. My mom drove us to see the Pleasure Seekers somewhere on the east side of Detroit. Our band, Girls Inc., had only been playing out for a short while. Pleasure Seekers did the exact lineup that is mentioned in one of the articles you read. We were blown away. My mom told us that we needed to get back in that basement and practice. We were inspired and we worked hard to get better. I think that seeing your band made us determined to be better. So thank you, my friend." Close quote.
Wow. She was amazing. She's my bass player from another mother. I played with her later in other bands. She was an amazing left-handed, upside-down bass player. And what she says highlights the magic of Detroit's other female musicians being inspired to uplift. It was not negatively competitive, you know, they just, that was the magic of Detroit compared to the other experience I had later in LA, where the, you know, some cattiness and competition came in, the malice of LA and the biz there, totally different. But this was what the women were like in Detroit that were playing and trying to make their way up.
I love that. I love that.
I mean,
Not competitive, but inspired to uplift. I love that concept. And isn't that the whole point? Right?
yes, it is. It is
I
very
think
much
so.
so.
Well, another fan of the Pleasure Seekers, this one happens to be a male fan, and his name is Steve Barone or Baroni. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing this. And he wrote on our podcast Facebook page, he said, quote, "I saw them," meaning the Pleasure Seekers, "I saw them in 1968 in Wenatchee, Washington."
Wow.
Steve reflected, quote, "I was 17 and they were amazing in every sense of the word. Better than any of the male groups like the Wailers, the Kingsmen, the Seeds. Lord knows a whole bunch of them played there. But those women," and he adds, "they were definitely not girls, had more moxie than the whole roster of male groups put together. Merrily Rush was almost as good," close quote. And Steve includes a photo of himself and ends with, quote, "The photo is of me a few years back holding my 1964 Tiesco modified guitar. Actually played it with my group, the Chargers, on the same stage that the Pleasure Seekers played several times. It was an honor to stand in their footsteps." And he concludes with, "I always wanted to hear their story," close quote. Well, Steve, you've come to the right place and the right podcast. All things pleasure seekers. And also, a quick aside for those who don't know about Merrily Rush and the Turnabouts, she was an artist from the Pacific Northwest, and she and the Turnabouts were also focused and highlighted on this tour with Pat O'Day. And it's interesting to me that Steve, who was a male and a male musician, only cited you and another female artist as being impressed, and more so than the male bands that he saw. So I'm curious about your thoughts on this.
It's interesting. What a quote from him. And he was right there in the Northwest with us. It's so cool to hear that. And Pat O'Day's focus was on Merrily Rush, and she had a hit record out and on the Pleasure Seekers. That was his focus, who we didn't have a big hit yet. And his main effort was to extend us and hold us over for Eric Burdon and all that. So, I mean, yeah, this guy giving us the attention, even though he was, you know, had Merrily too. He focused on us. It was unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. And so you're back. I guess you never left the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest. As you said, Pat O'Day kept you over. He's doing everything he can to promote you. I mean, and he is vocal about it. He is hustling you guys, to use a modern day term, in a good way because he believes in you so much. And this promotion will extend to a Seattle, am I getting that right, TV show. And
Right.
first, what I want to do is, now that I know you've never left the Pacific Northwest, did you, what are the logistics? How did you get any of your things from Detroit, or did you have everything that you needed?
We had what we needed because when we packed for a tour, or a bunch of gigs, we had enough stuff with us, all our costuming, everything. But what he did was he situated us on Mercer Island at the Tamarack Apartments. So he put us, we had been in a hotel for the Seattle Teen Fair. And now we were, situated in an apartment for the entire summer. And that was our home base.
Well, that
And
must.
that included all the states, I mean, he was booking the whole Northwest. It wasn't just Seattle anymore. Nope.
So this is a bona fide apartment, and you're young girls in a hot rock and roll band. Were there any antics in this apartment, or were you just too busy touring and playing and all of that? I can see the look on your face right now.
A couple antics come up. Yeah, I mean, at one point, we had when we were leaving later in the summer, I don't know, we took some towels and pots and pans and we got in big trouble and the apartment was really pissed and Leo made us go and he wanted us to go turn it in and apologize and all that. I forget who did it, but him and Gil ended up going in and saying, "Here's the stuff." And I don't know why we did that. I can't even remember, but it was a little bit of trouble because the apartment management was pissed, that we were going to try to take some towels and stuff.
It was
Stupid
memorabilia.
stuff. Yeah, stupid.
And
That's it. We
everyone
didn't wreck
gets
the room. We didn't wreck the room like the Who did. I mean, but we had our way of rebelling a little, I guess.
so they threw out a television set and you stole some towels. There you go.
A little
You
different.
rebels, you.
Oh my God. What rebels, huh? Oh my God.
Well, you just mentioned Gil, and for those who may not remember, Gil Kiper, speaking of the Who, was the roadie for the Who, but he's American. And so when the Who went back to the UK, he stayed and became the Pleasure Seekers roadie. And he also was dating Darlene, Dar Thumper, our known. So there was that going on. And Leo, of course, is your manager, Leo Fenn, who was married to your sister, Arlene Quattro, at this moment in time. And so there you are in the Pacific Northwest in your Tamarack Apartments. And it's July 10th now, 1968. And Light of Love, your single, is the top single of the week in Variety magazine. And it reads, quote, "The Pleasure Seeker's Light of Love is a sharply arranged R&R piece set for strong counter returns," close quote. But I just want to let you know that you were in a list of some really mighty bands at this time. There, the other Variety hit picks included the Beach Boys, Petula Clark, Archie Bell and the Drells, Tony Bennett, Nancy Sinatra, Soul Clown, James Brown, and the Famous Flames, and yes, the Pleasure Seekers. I mean, Patty, when you saw this in print, and there you are having this moment, and it's legit, what were you thinking as the band leader and visionary?
I think these teenagers are in very good company. We were very lucky at the press we got. I'm telling you, it was amazing. We were pretty excited.
It's just really incredible. Well, and as this Pacific Northwest tour was underway, and you're having now a top single pick from Variety, your teen fans started to swell to such a point. I mean, we're now talking beyond the 5-minute standing ovations and the screaming and the males and the females vying for the front row seats. But now you're going to have a Pleasure Seekers fan club, an official fan club. So tell us all about it, including its founder. And do you remember membership costs? What did you receive as a member? Anything you want on this. I just love this.
Kathy Perry was the one that started it. She was a young gal like us, and she started it very quickly. She came to every gig. The interest was high, and a lot of people joined because she would push it at the gigs too. And I remember her fa having a fan helper too, and they kept doing newsletters. They would put them out, and info, and even a page on each member, which was pretty funny. I mean, it was a long page of, in depth about the member in the band. And she was pretty creative and very proactive on handling all this. And she did a lot of mailings, and she distributed stuff at the gigs. She'd have stuff there that they could take. It cost $1 to join. And we have, you have it, the membership card and everything. I mean, she was very professional about it. She did a great job.
So you answered my question. Kathy Perry was a fan who saw you in the Pacific Northwest
Yes.
and founded it. So I'm just curious because when I think of a fan club, I think of like the Beatles. And so did you have fans that only loved Patty? And did you have fans that were screaming only over Susie?
We had all of it. They had their favorites. We used to get letters all the time from different people, to different members. And oh my God, I love you. And on. It was so cute. I still have some of those. They're in my archives. They're pretty funny. They were very, it wasn't like they would write about the whole band. A lot of them had like their own favorite person, that was natural. And everybody got their share, though. What I noticed, Darlene got a lot of attention being a girl drummer, Susie got a lot, Arlene got a lot, we all got our letters, and they were just so heartwarming. Yeah, it made us feel incredible that we had this fan club going now. Who knew, that that was going to happen?
Well, I say this without any kind of condescension here, like in the sense of I'm not trying to put anybody down, but that is just too darn cute that you had a fan club and that they were so into you. I just think that is wonderful. And I'm going to make you look for those letters because I think
I know you
Kathy, I think Kathy Perry's hard work of founding the Pleasure Seekers fan club should be honored, and all of these voices who loved you so much, I think we should read from it. So that's a little bit of homework for you, Patty. Well, in addition, as we mentioned, to all of this going on, you're playing now, you have teen clubs, you have an apartment that you're hanging out in and being totally rebellious in, teasing you. But tell us about this Oregon TV show and how all of this came about. This too is Pat O'Day. Yes, he had, you said he had his hands in many pies. So tell us about this performance, the songs you played. But I also want to remind the listeners that this is not your first TV show where you're performing. The first one you did was the John Gary TV show when you were in Miami. So this is a couple months back. But we don't have footage of that, at least not so far. But the good news is, this television show, we do. We have the two songs that you performed, and we will be sharing them in links when this episode comes out. But Patty, set the stage for us. Tell us all about it.
That was really hilarious. It was this tiny little puddle jumper plane, like tiny. It had to fly low and everything. Susie got stuck sitting on the toilet at the back of the plane. She was scared shitless. And,
Wait,
we had.
there's too many puns for that one. I can't, I have to stop you there. She was stuck on the toilet using the toilet.
No. It was the only seat. It was the only seat left. She had to, they said, oh, you'll have to sit back here.
Well,
She
when you said she was
was
scared shitless, that's where I was like, hold on.
Oh, God. Yeah,
Hold
well,
on.
she'll kill me. She'll kill me. No, but anyway, we got there. The guy was a sweetheart. We did two songs. Susie did one, and I did one. Susie did her famous head twirling thing, which, oh my God, forever, for decades, people have commented, how did her head not come off? She was a dancer and she did this whole thing during her song. And it was fabulous. I'm so glad we have it and can link it because it's been online and it's so fun to see what we were doing. You see the movement, the dancing, the everything. It's a very cool video
And
and
what was
it's.
the song? What was the name of the song?
Reach out, she did reach out, and I did a female one, Gotta Make You Love Me, where I had the mic and sang. So Susie had one, and I had one. It was great. And you can see too what I was beginning to do, which will come in later with some other stories, how I used to hold my guitar up and play with it in the air and do, little showy things that I felt was making me my image that I enjoyed doing to add some excitement. And all of that's in that tape. So it's a cool representation. Yeah.
It really is, and I'm glad that you brought that up because your showmanship and your playing starts to get talked about a lot because it is so unique. And I've used this word with you before in other seasons, but you are so charismatic when you're performing that it's hard to take your eyes off of you because of the way you handle yourself on stage, whether it's holding the guitar, whether it's singing, whether it's your moves. And I'm so excited that we have these videos as well to share because now we get to bring Patty Quatro into the mix of hearing from you. And so there's another aspect with all of this going on, if you can believe it, with the band's popularity and notoriety. And you brought this up, but I want to now tease this out a little bit. So the band starts to get popular. We understand that. But Darlene starts to gain a serious popularity and notoriety because of her drumming and how unique it was. And people just are gravitating toward her. And the thing that I want to say before we even talk about this is the other four of you are not lacking in your talents. You are all fantastic musically, but I just think it was so unique to see her on these double bass drums, and they were pink, and we have pictures of them. And there she is playing as fast and as well as all the other male drummers that are out there, like Mooney or whatever. So I'd love for you to describe what was starting to happen with Dar and the popularity and the reception of your fans.
Okay, I'll go a little bit introspective here because, you got to remember we're still teenagers, human beings with our own little coming of age about our own image and where we wanted to go with our music. And at this point, a female drummer was so terribly novel to fans, more than playing, even more than playing guitar and organ and stuff, because it was something unusual. A drummer that's a girl, Darlene was very popular on the Northwest tour, and she got a lot of attention from it. She was a friendly girl, not a lick of conceit in her personality, so she appreciated all that was happening without bragging or throwing it in our face. She never would think of doing that. She was just, oh, that's cool, And out in public, fans would gather around Darlene, being the drummer. At one mall, she was surrounded by fans. You have a picture. And the managers at the Nordstrom store had to rush her back out the back door because they were like surrounding her. It was pretty funny. This happened often when we would go to a mall and shopping. People would, oh, there they are.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, I understand that you're saying she didn't have any conceit here, but did this kind of imbalanced attention from your fans cause any internal conflict or jealousy? And the reason why I'm asking is because we've talked previously about potential jealousy about a favorite band member or a certain single being selected over another single or any other varying factor. I mean, you are a young woman, you are still coming of age. And I'm just wondering now that you have Pat O'Day and the backing and the TV show and Dar's sponsorship and all of this attention that she's receiving, even though you are as well. But it seems to be a little bit more tilted toward her. How did this
Right.
affect all of you?
Again, you have a way of making me introspective on all this because I like to get in the female psyche of what these women were going through. And we'd already dealt, as you said, with Susie Single being the chosen one and Darlene having to deal with it. I think what I would say that Susie and I are like oil and water on this, the words jealousy and envy. I mean, they're such a difference. You can be envious and, oh, I want that same attention or whatever as you're building your image. But being jealous means you begrudge the other person. And that's what we weren't. We weren't jealous in that ugly way. It's fine to have envy, and I don't know. We didn't begrudge another member for her attention and all that. This was a strong sisterhood gaining attention. So it was bound to happen at times, but we had our heads on straight in motivation, and our friendship was so close in our collective journey. So, Darlene remembers Susie being a little quieter at this outpouring of attention. They roomed together, nothing overt. But, I think this is when Susie found a little bit more of a strong, driven hunger, a tad more intense, to distinguish herself. as we went forward. I think that helped her find that within herself, you know, like, I want that too. And da da, you know, it made her come out a little more. That's what I believe about her psyche at that moment in the Northwest.
Well, I want to pause there for a second because we have spoken about Susie's attention for the spotlight, and that's probably not the way to put it, from childhood, because she was called Susie Sausage as opposed to it was a horrible nickname by your father. And she did always vie for this attention. And so this kind of hunger that you're talking about to me, but I want you to correct the record here, doesn't start in the Pacific Northwest. I think there were seeds of it before.
Yes.
But what I would also like you to talk about is you use the word that Susie got a little quiet while this was happening with Dar and that they were rooming together. But aren't you in a hotel? I mean, aren't you in an apartment? Excuse me.
She roomed with Darlene, and years later, when Darlene and I met up, she remembered that. She said, you know, she got really cool with me, just real quiet after, you know, when I was getting that kind of attention. And it bothered her a little, you know, but she just took it in stride. But she said she thought that she was going through that, you know, feeling, well, you're getting a lot of attention there. So she just sort of drew away a little bit. It wasn't overt. I mean, you know, they roomed together, but that's what happened. You know, that's the human part of growing up, a girl, and finding our image and our place within this friendship and collective motivation that we all had with each other, you know.
I think that's really interesting. And also, Dar remembering back on this moment and
Yeah.
seeing or thinking that Susie was quiet or cool. I then want to withdraw any kind of, as you said, jealousy or envy. And maybe this was the moment where Susie herself started to reflect and be introspective and say,
Yep.
okay, what do I want to do here? And why am I wanting that same attention? So
Yep.
maybe it was more crystallizing for her now.
I agree. I agree. I think at that moment, Northwest Tour brought a lot of change and transition and growth. So, I mean, we were fan clubs, ovations, letters, you know, I mean, it was all going on. Of course, it would make growth in us, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're living in your own apartment for 3 months. That's a very different experience. And all of this is shifting for you, a hit record, a TV show, everything that you mentioned. And so I just want to say, Patty, we've been talking about the inner machinations, the dynamics and personalities of a popular young band on the road. And so I am not done with this conversation because it's 3 months that you were there. And so on the next episode, we are going to continue the Northwest tour with you, the Pleasure Seekers, Pat O'Day, and so many other hot bands of the time. It is a 3 month stint after all. So, Patty, as you are so good at doing, why don't you tease us a bit about what's coming up on this 3 month tour?
Well, Pat O'Day kept us hopping. We were booked constantly. He really took care of all of it. And we headlined at all these different places. I can't even tell you the names of them because we're moving all the time. But I'm sure in some of the news articles it says the name, oh, they're here tonight and here tonight. And then we were with Eric Burdon too. So it was crazy. And the fans followed us, whether it was with Eric Tour or our own individual, and they were always sold out. And it was an amazing summer of love.
I can take my time, oh woman. Ba-ba-da-da, ba-ba-da-da. together.
Let's spend the night together. Now I need you more than ever. You know I'm smiling, baby. You've been forgotten, baby. I'm just a silent baby now. I need you more than ever. Let's spend the night together. Let's spend the night together now.
Let's spend the night together. Now I need you more than ever. Let's spend the night together now.